AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts,
the medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Hello Somebody, a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia, where we rage against the machine, where we raise our voices against injustice and stand up for justice, where we embrace hope and joy with an optimism for a brighter, more just future. Each week, I'll be dropping knowledge, whether it's a solo episode from me or a hearty discussion with esteemed guests doing great things in spaces and places of politics, entertainment, social justice, and beyond. We get real, baby. I mean, really real. We get honest. We get up close and personal for you. Yes, you. Because everybody is somebody. Before we begin, I want to give a special shout out to my team. Thank you, Sim, Tiffany, Sam, and the team over at Good Juju Studios, Erica England, Pepper Chambers, the hot one, and my social media team.
Hello, somebody. Before I begin today, I want to give a very special shout out to all of the teachers and educators on every single level of the educational spectrum, from preschool teachers, well, to the first teachers, which should be mama and daddy, and don't leave out the grandmas, the yayas, hello somebody, to formal teachers who teach in a classroom, whether it's preschool, elementary school, middle school, high school, or college, universities, postgraduate education, wherever you are, baby. If you are a teacher, if you're a counselor at a camp, summer camp, and you a teacher, I just want to shout you out. So from daycare centers to enrichment centers, teachers, math teachers, all kinds of teachers, I just want to lift you up wherever you are. I am with you. And I too am a teacher, both as a mama teacher, a yaya teacher, and I was a formal teacher in the classroom. I guess in some ways I'm still teaching because the world is my classroom, baby. Hello, somebody. Can I get a hello, somebody on that? But I did teach. I was tenured professor at Cuyahoga Community College, where futures begin, in Cleveland, Ohio. And that was one of the greatest things I've been able to do in my professional career, which is to be a college professor and to teach. And community colleges, I believe, hold a special place in the educational spectrum, because we take all and our sole focus is the enrichment of our students. So just sending that kind of love. And speaking of love and speaking of educators, today I am so excited to have Mary Cole Watson on our show today. Sister Watson is not only a veteran educator of over 30 years, she has also served as a Title I reading director and diversity facilitator, trained by Gestalt Institute. And Mary shares her experience from the lives of children from her classroom in her debut book, Wisdom Warriors. Her acclaimed work, The 28 Lessons for African American Youth is included in Wisdom Warriors and was featured in our very own local newspaper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Let's give a hello somebody welcome to Sister Mary Cole Watson. It's so good to have you here with us. I love your book. I've started reading your book and I love the cover. For me, and I know a lot of people, before they even start to thumb through a page of the book, the cover gets you first. It's that presentation. But Wisdom Warriors, let's talk about race, and it includes 28 lessons for African American youth. So I want to start there. 30 years in the teaching profession. What gives?
Well, actually 35 years now, because I returned to the classroom part-time, sort of by accident. My husband had me on Indeed, and I received a call in October, and the recruiter said, "Are you still interested in a job that you applied for a year and a half ago?" And I thought it was a prank call.
Oh, no.
Long story short, I told him it depends upon the hours and so on. And as it turns out, I ended up accepting a part-time position teaching reading.
Not surprised that you're teaching reading still. And right. Before we get too deep into it, Title I, a lot of people don't understand the Title I, and that money goes to some of the poorest schools in the nation. And you taught reading under that banner in some of the schools that have the greatest needs.
Right. So I was a Title I coordinator actually for 3 years, and I supervised 13 teachers. I was promoted to that position because my reading test scores of my students were exceptionally high from year to year. And so the program is for students who need remedial help in reading, and we meet in small groups. But I know, being an African American who majored in African American history with a passion for African American students, it was such an honor for me to lead the other instructors in how the program would operate for the system that I was working for. 12 of the 13 instructors were white professionals, and they were very, very energetic about having me and my expertise. And that was such an honor to do for those 3 years.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that says a lot about you and your skill set and how you are using what I see as a gift to edify our children through the power of reading. Yeah. We know that reading scores are tied to, or let's say, illiteracy and prison.
Yes.
You know, that there's a correlation between not being able to read and prison rates.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. You are definitely doing God's work in that way. And then we know also in the 21st century, the whole notion of education, the paradigm has shifted. It really is about lifelong learning, and to be able to learn and take in, absorb your environment in a way that enriches. Reading is a foundational skill to have.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was it about education? I mean, did you always know that you wanted to be?
Let me tell you, I didn't go to kindergarten, but when I entered first grade, I fell in love with learning, just fell in love with it. And I knew in first grade that I wanted to be a teacher. I'm one of 11 children, and I would gather several of my siblings and I would play teacher. And I would teach a lesson. I would give out homework. I would give tests, and I would grade the tests in red ink. I knew, and it's provided me joy that is indescribable. So I was lucky enough to know precisely what it is I wanted to do.
There are very few people who kind of know very early on in their lives what they are destined to do. Again, I consider that very much a gift. Unlike me, I remember hanging in my grandmother's hallway in her home. She had purchased her 7 grandchildren a set of Britannica encyclopedias. I'm dating myself now, because some people listening to this are like, encyclopedias, what are those? They only know about Google, you know? But in the olden days.
Right. But I'm so much older than you, so you can feel better.
But just, I mean, the whole that, and even then, as I was daydreaming about what I might want to be, when I right. grow up. Being a teacher was one of those things. I also thought I wanted to be a nun.
Me too.
Did you? My mother.
Yes, I went to Catholic school.
You did. Well, see, I get it for you. I had a dear friend of mine who was Catholic, and we would switch going to service with one another. And so I did mm-hmm. was exposed a lot to the Catholic Church because my very best girlfriend growing up, I went to a Catholic church. My mother easily dissuaded me from wanting to be a nun. She's like, baby, no, you don't. You'll understand yeah. when you get older. So, right. But no shade to the nuns. Now, no shade to the nuns. So you always knew your grading folks paper. You got out the red ink and everything. I got to tell you, as a teacher, I decided not to use red ink because I was traumatized right. by red ink.
Right. So I started, you know, when I started teaching, I used different colored ink.
Yes, me too.
You know, all the different colors
that
the kids like.
That's right. So we can traumatize them with the different colors and not just red. But no, it was a psychological thing and I wanted to not use red. So it's nice to talk to someone else.
Because it's that failure feeling that you feel like you're failing.
That's right.
And I didn't want kids I was very sensitive to kids' feelings.
Yes, so am I. And people need to be, even when you're helping them to grow academically, they also need to know that they have what it takes innately to be successful. I mean, we're such a who's number one driven society that it really, really snuffs out any creativity that people may have, because if they can't be number one, who wants to be number two? If I can't get that A, then I'm not good enough. Right. And I, as an educator, believe in the portfolio approach. I don't think that a student should be judged simply by one test or one moment.
Yes, absolutely. We're on the same page with that. And I feel that that's why I was so successful with my students.
Yeah. Some students are excellent at test taking. Some are not.
Right.
So let's do a test. Let's do community service. Let's do projects. And judge a student based on a plethora of measures and not just one. Yeah.
Yes.
But that is what makes you an extraordinary educator.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to go back to the book, The 28 Lessons for African-American Youth.
Yes.
So you created and authored this book. What inspired you to develop the lessons, and how was the process for picking out the specific lessons? Because someone with 35 years of experience, I'm sure you had a lot to draw from. How were you able to narrow it to 28 lessons? And what is it about the 28?
All right. Well, first of all, when I was teaching at the high school level, I was very distressed with how African American History Month was pretty much dismissed. And when there was a celebration, the celebration focused mainly on the food. And I noticed that there were several assemblies for the Jewish Holocaust, and all the teachers encouraged their students, even though the school was predominantly Black, to go to all the assemblies about the Holocaust. And these assemblies took place several times during the year. But when Black History Month assemblies took place, many teachers refused to take their students. And so I wanted the students to have something that they could celebrate their history every day for the month of February. So I came up with the 28 because of the 28 days in February. I wanted them to have be able to either journal or discuss the different lessons that I put together. What happened, you know, it's interesting. When I was writing the lessons, I have to be very honest with you. I sat down one day and it was almost like the spirit took over. 14 of those lessons just poured out. I'm just writing them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 14. And I said, oh my God, this is so good. And I was so nervous that I wouldn't be able to come up with 14 more. And the very next day I sat down and the remaining 14 just came out. And so literally it took a couple of hours for 2 days. And
beautiful.
At the beginning of that school year, at the convocation where all the teachers have to meet in the auditorium and listen to a keynote speaker, the mayor of Cleveland Heights University Heights said, "Will Mary Cole Watson stand up?" And I had no idea what she wanted me to stand up for. And she applauded my lessons. And she said that she felt that every single teacher should be using those lessons in their classroom. So I was honored by the fact that she felt as strongly about those lessons as I did.
That's beautiful. I mean, what a tribute to you. There's a quote, I think it goes something like, "Never stop learning because life never stops teaching."
That's right.
Profound.
That's right.
And even in the writing of your book, I feel as though life was teaching you something in that moment and preparing you to be able to write this book all along the way.
And I want to tell you how that came about.
Sure.
I was teaching in Cleveland for a couple of years at a charter school. And all my lessons were culturally relevant. And for this one particular lesson, a female student interrupted my lesson and became very emotional. And she said, "Mrs. Watson, you need to write stories to help kids feel good about themselves the way you help us feel good about ourselves." I had always wanted to write a book. I felt that the pinnacle of my profession would be to write a book. And I wanted the book to be special, something that would make a real difference in children's lives. And one day I was cleaning the house and you know how you talk to yourself out loud. I said, "Oh my God, that's it. That's the book. I'm supposed to write a book about racism." I went directly upstairs to the computer. I sat at the computer and I did not leave my seat until the rough draft to my very first story was written. And, you know, the reception of the book has been so heartwarming. It's in 4 libraries right now. Cleveland Heights University Heights director said to me, "Oh my God, I love everything about this book." And, you know, I didn't think I'd be able to write about a topic that is so painful and give kids the joy that I wanted them to have so that they could have resilience. But my African-American history degree allowed me to do that. Majoring in African-American history is the single best decision I made in my entire life. The second would be marrying my husband. When I went to college, a mid-sized college, which was known for education and for PE, both subject areas I excelled in, I happened to walk by a door that said African-American history, and I had never had an African-American instructor. I had never been exposed to any African-American history. I happen to be African, by the way. My father is from Sierra Leone, Freetown, West Africa. And so I went into the office. I knocked on the door just to find out what African-American history was. I signed up for classes, and oh my God, I fell in love with being African American. It changed my entire life. It gave me a joy for living beyond the tragedy and trauma of racism because I knew the truths. The focus was on the African diaspora. I'm not pronouncing that correctly, excuse me, getting a little tongue-tied here. But the focus was on our phenomenal achievements before we were enslaved.
Yeah.
And so that gave me a joy that is indescribable that I carried with me from that day throughout my life. And I wanted to make certain that my students felt that same joy. And so I made my curriculum culturally relevant in every way I could.
Good for you. The diaspora, you know, Black people yes. in the diaspora.
Yes.
And one of our great champions for Pan-Africanism, Marcus Garvey.
Yes. Oh, my God.
The great one and only. Yeah, mine too, Marcus Garvey. He did a lot to try to help Black people of ultimately, no matter where we were dropped off at in the Americas and all over the world, our origin is on that continent, the continent of Africa. And Marcus Garvey did a lot to try to help African people, African descendant people understand, appreciate, acknowledge and embrace their Blackness and all of its beauty and majesty. And the United States of America did that man in because he and J. Edgar Hoover was very much a part of it. Just what he did to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., what he did to Minister Malcolm X, the counter quarantine pro that was at his hand to try to destroy the Black Panthers. I mean, you name it. You name it.
Yes.
Whenever there were leaders, whether they were men or women, you know, Angela Davis comes to mind. A whole bunch of leaders that stood up for Black people and told the truth about this nation. There was the federal government trying to undo them, cause them harm, infiltrate them. And that is exactly what they did, causing a whole bunch of chaos. Chairwoman Elaine Brown is still in Oakland right now. Oakland, California, you know, one of the Black Panthers. And just to hear some of the stories that she tells, the movie that came out about Fred Hampton's life, Judith and the Messiah, it just brings tears to my eyes every time I watch that. And all of that was at the hands of the federal government. But I got off track here just having you talk about the beauty of Black people. And that's really how I came to study African-American history, too. I was told, you know, you'll never get a job and there's nothing relevant about what you're studying. My first college professor of African-American history is still my surrogate mother, mentor to this day, Dr. Dorothy Salem. And Mary, I remember walking into that class as a freshman. You know, I signed up for Black History and I see this white woman with blonde hair and greenish kind of eyes standing in the front of the classroom. I said, I must be in the wrong class because only Black people can teach Black history. Ain't nobody going to understand. This lady, this white lady ain't going to understand. And she forever changed my life and is definitely the reason, similar to yours, that I came to embrace the beauty of Black history and its relevance to America's history and to world history. Oh my God, Dr. Dorothy Salem, let me shout her out. She has a PhD in African American history.
And I want to shout out Dr. Herbert Douglas.
Yes.
He's 86 years old. We stay in touch. And I was nervous about sending him my book because he's an intimidating figure. He taught at an Ivy League school. And my husband mailed him the book and he sent me back a card with the quote that this impressive publication is a significant contribution to children's literature. So I didn't care what anybody else said. If Dr. Douglas felt that way about my book, I knew I was onto something.
That's it. No, when the teacher is pleased, the ultimate teacher is pleased.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know this is probably unfair to ask you to pick one of those 28 lessons, but would you be willing to share one of the 28 lessons with us today?
Yes, that lesson would be, we will celebrate African American beauty. African American beauty comes in a variety of shades, facial features, and hair textures. That is our beauty, and we should compare ourselves to our beauty, to our culture, and not other cultures.
Amen. Let's go deeper with that. Why that? Why is that the one you're sharing? And why put that in the book?
I have to say they're all very special. I came from a severely dysfunctional family, and my mother was very light. She could have passed for white, actually. And my father was very dark, and she would argue with him constantly. And whenever she would argue with him, she would call him all kinds of names regarding his color. And I have to be honest, as a little girl, no matter what she said, I just thought my father was so handsome. I just thought he was regal. He had such a laid-back personality. Oh my goodness, absolutely handsome. Nothing anyone could say would convince me otherwise. And when I was teaching, a lot of my darker skinned students felt inferior. They had an inferiority complex. And I would hear them calling each other names. And so to me, this was the most important lesson as a teacher, to let everyone know that our hair texture has a purpose and that our features are all equal.
Yes.
They're just different.
Come on, you better preach that sermon. Sister Mary, you better go ahead and preach that. And I can relate. And the fact that you have students of the 21st century harboring, still carrying that means that the Eurocentric worldview and the Eurocentric and part of that worldview is what's beautiful and what's not. And we know that we've been socialized in this nation and even the world. That standard of beauty has penetrated the entire world.
Right.
That it has polluted as a Black community in the diaspora, but particularly here in America, in the United States of America, polluted our sense of self. So going back to Brother Marcus Garvey, that was another thing about him, that dark, dark, beautifully Black skin.
Yes.
And he said to Black people, rise up, you beautiful people.
Yes.
I mean, so it wasn't even just, it was the solidarity point, but it was also him reminding us that we are brilliant and we are beautiful. And Sister Mary, to hear you say that children of this day still feel that way, that they are inferior, because we're passing that down. And as much as we think we have advanced it, you know what meant a lot to me, and I would love to hear how you felt about it, but I wish 12-year-old Nina, because I'm a darker skinned black woman, I'm a chocolate.
You have a gorgeous complexion, by the way. I love darker complexions. I always have.
Well, thank you, Sister Mary. Well, everybody comes from the original. Let me just say that, okay? The mitochondrial Eve, that, you know, all life originated in Africa, and you best believe she was a chocolate sister. But we have been programmed to think the lighter you are, the closer to white you are, the more beautiful you are. And you are causing me to go back into my younger self. And even today, as a grown, accomplished, beautiful, hot chocolate sister, I still struggle with how I was treated in elementary school, in junior high, and also high school, as it relates to my complexion, to the hue of my skin. I remember in elementary school, this lighter skin girl, we were standing in line to go to on a field trip, and she just came up and she rubbed her hand against my face. Now, while she was all invading my space like that, that's a whole nother thing. And then she rubbed her hand up against her face, Mary, and she turned and she said to me, she said, "My skin," she was lighter than me, "my skin is softer than yours because I'm lighter than you." I mean, these things are poured into children at a very young age. One of my nieces, she's grown now, but when she was growing up, she had a white Barbie and a black Barbie. I, for one, don't believe that black children should be given white dolls until they have a sense of their beauty and their purpose. However, her paternal grandmother felt the need to give her this white Barbie doll. And so I brought the dolls because she was only playing with white Barbie. Vanilla Barbie. She wasn't playing with chocolate Barbie. And I asked her why. And she told me that the vanilla Barbie hair was longer. And I said, well, let's bring the Barbies together. Now, she's a little girl. Mary, there was no difference in the length of the hair of those Barbies. You better know, her mother didn't sit her down and say the white Barbie is better. Society told her that the white Barbie was better.
That's right.
You know? And so I'm so happy for you and just you allowing the spirit to lead and to guide you, because in those 28 lessons, every single one is important and germane to what is needed to help raise healthy black children who are aware of their worth and their beauty, but also to help children who are not black understand the worth.
Exactly. And the beauty. Exactly. I've had a white pediatrician, a white therapist. Many white people have contacted me to let me know how much they learned from my book.
Very good. And that's what we got to do. Again, African-American history is America's history, and everybody should learn.
Exactly.
And if you are in a classroom anywhere in America, but especially if you teach in a district that is predominantly black, you must understand what it takes to teach black children and also understand the stigma still that is associated with being black and that there's colorism, because we talk a lot about racism. We talk about it. We ain't doing much about it. But we don't talk a lot, I don't think, about is anti-blackness colorism. Absolutely colorism. Let me share another story with you. I was in high school and I remember I was trying out for a play. And I finished my high school years back in Cleveland. For like five brief years of my life, I was out of the state growing up. My mother took us somewhere else for about 5 years. And I tried out for this play. It was a Charlie Brown. And Mary, I got to tell you, I tried out for Lucy. And I knew I did that. Have you ever had a moment in your life where you just said, I know I did that. I knew I did that.
Exactly.
And I stood up there and I was waiting. You know, when the teacher puts who got the parts, I didn't see my name by Lucy. And so I went to my drama teacher, who was the one that was directing the play, and asked him. I said, I know I was the best Lucy. And he said, yes, Nina, you were the best Lucy, but Lucy is not black. Oh, my God. Mary.
Wow.
That hurt me to my heart.
Oh, yeah. Of course it
did. I still carry it to this day. Lucy ain't black. You hear me?
I understand. Yep.
Man, and people have no idea when you perpetuate this. And not only does a larger society, mainstream society, perpetuates this, black people continue to perpetuate it, too.
Because they don't know any better. Because they're still learning from what they're being taught. subtly and consciously, yeah. You know?
Yes, absolutely. Subliminally, it is.
Yeah, subliminally. Yeah. That's the word.
Yeah, we definitely need to do a better job. I encourage each and every person who is joining us today on Hello Somebody to go. Please go. Don't run. Well, you don't have to go anywhere. You can order it online, but please order Mary Cole Watson's book.
It's Wisdom Warriors, 22 short stories for African-American youth, and that the 28 lessons are in the last story.
In the last story. Okay. And how can people find you on social media? And where can they order your book?
WisdomWarriors2020.com is where they can order my book.
Very good. Well, please order it again. That's Wisdom Warriors. Let's talk about race. Please get it. Mary Cole Watson. And it includes the essential 28 lessons for African-American youth. And I would add to that the essential 28 lessons for African-American youth and those who love those African-American youth. How about that?
Mary Cole Watson,
please keep using your gifts and your skills to edify the world. Keep bringing that wisdom and that love that the Creator has given you for our children, lifting them up as individuals and also educating and illuminating the very people who are in classrooms with them. I'm talking about the grown folks. Keep doing what you're doing to make this world a better place. We are blessed by your existence.
I will. And I thank you so much for inviting me on your podcast. It's been an honor.
Oh, the honor is
And I really enjoyed listening to your words of wisdom at the gathering where I met you.
Well, thank you so much. I was glad to meet you too. I think that happened on purpose. It wasn't by accident. And here we are.
Absolutely.
Interviewing the one and only Mary Cole Watson. Thank you so much. And for all of you who have joined us today, we appreciate you so much. The entire Hello Somebody team appreciates you for being with us. Make sure that you like our podcast. Make sure you give us those 5 stars, baby, if you believe in what we are doing. And remember to keep the faith and keep the fight. Hello Somebody, because everybody is somebody.
Coming, the pain is numbing. Try to shoot for the stars if you gon' aim for something. Embrace the love for your brother and sister. Unity's the missing brush, we need to puzzle this picture. Let's paint it up, frame it up for the world to see. Hang the hatred up. Enough is enough, is enough. Making changes on us. Interna, her voice is the truth. Her wise words inspire the youth to keep their eyes on the roof. It's the end, never give up, keep conquering goals. To the eye, intelligence, silver, wisdom is gold. Back to the end, now is your time, stay firm, don't fold. To the A, all you need is the 3 bones, that's what Granny said. Now I'ma make sure these words from Granny spread. For all of here, just give her your ear. She can take you to the promised land, I swear. World peace is what they fear. From Queens to Cleveland, Ohio, we here. Famous.
Hello Somebody is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.